Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soshnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the $405 billion sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
$405 billion. Yeah, the only thing I regret here, Evan, is that our friend, Mr. Kurt Bodenhausen, is not available to join us, because when we tout his work and anything that has anything to do with valuations, of course, you know, Kurt has his fingerprints all over it. But he's traveling today and, you know, not in a spot where he can join us and do this. So you and I will just have to interpret exactly how Kurt came up with the most valuable franchises, global, in professional sports, and the top, he did top 100, and that's the $405 billion. In aggregate, the top 100 franchises, according to Kurt, have a worth of $405 billion, led by, drumroll please, although it's already been out, no surprise, the Dallas Cowboys.
Does $405 billion, does that seem high or low to you in the grand scheme?
Seems like a lot of money.
It does.
Seems
like a lot of money. It's funny. I had the exact opposite feeling. I mean, obviously, I know a good deal of Kurt's numbers, and I could probably have back-ended it myself. I mean, put this another way. How many U.S. companies do you think have a market cap above $405 billion?
How many U.S. companies? Apple, Google, Amazon. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. I don't know. How many have
eight,
you done this?
There's 18.
18. Over $405 billion?
Yeah. The
give, 18, me, give me some that I wouldn't have come up with.
ExxonMobil is the lowest.
I would have come up with
$419
million. See, I would have gone to the oil companies. Okay.
United Health Group Incorporated.
Yeah, healthcare makes sense, but I wouldn't have come up with it.
Broadcom, $567 million. Tesla, which you probably would have come up with, 614.
Yeah, I would have come up with
Eli
Tesla.
Lilly, Taiwan semiconductor manufacturer, Nvidia, obviously skyrocketing up this list in the past couple of years. Walmart's in there, Visa. I'm not sure if anyone here is a shock in terms of how big they are, but I think kind of framed that way, that there are 18 companies worth more than the 100 most valuable sports teams in the world. Right. Maybe is a silly way of looking at it, but I was a little surprised that it wouldn't have been higher on this list for sure.
I'm going to triangulate early.
Ooh.
Let's see if you get it right, Mr. Novy Williams. And by the way, you're throwing me off. Do you have like your headset like flipped up?
Yeah, it's the like microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you also like put your hair in a man bun, so I thought your man bun had suddenly been pulled to the side. I'm like, what an odd look. Now it's like it's not the bun. It's your microphone.
Yeah, it's my Britney mic. Yeah.
All right. Well, you mentioned Broadcom. Do you know who the founder of Broadcom is?
I'm sure.
Triangulating.
I do.
We're bringing it back to sports.
I don't know who.
Do you know the name Henry Samueli?
Oh, of course. Samueli family. Yeah, yeah. The owners of the Ducks.
Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just Ducks at this point. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyway,
there you go.
I was triangulating there. You just happened to mention Broadcom. That's Henry Samueli, and he owns the Ducks.
There you go.
Yep. Yep. So
what else jumps out to you on this list? I know you had a really good tweet about the highest, the most valuable team in each of the leagues.
Yeah, I went for the leagues just for fun. I wanted a peek. So NFL obviously got the Cowboys right there at the top. Makes perfect sense. Golden State Warriors. So NBA, you check them off the list. Golden State Warriors, number two. You want to go to baseball. New York Yankees come in at number five. Then you go to soccer. Manchester United comes in at number 13. Auto racing, F1, whatever you want to do. Ferrari is there at number, what was it?
71.
71, cross it out. And I was really, as I was going down the list, I was wondering if a National Hockey League team would make the top 100. And then there were the Toronto Maple Leafs at number 82.
Yeah, so there's a few in there on the way back end. The thing that of the numbers you just said, the one that jumps out to me the most, which genuinely does surprise me, and again, I look at every single one of Kurt's valuations. We talk about them every time mm-hmm. he does them on the show. The fact that there is not a soccer team in the top 10, there are only two soccer teams in the top 20. Of the most, I for a while there, and it has changed obviously, but for a while there, as of 2 or 3 years ago, Manchester United, Real Madrid, and Barcelona were kind of neck and neck with the Warriors and the Cowboys and the Yankees in terms of what the most valuable clubs in the world were. And then the U.S. market has shot up in terms of valuation relative to the European ones. And we could talk about why or why not that's happened. But it is genuinely surprising to me that you have Manchester United at 13, you have Real Madrid at 19, Barcelona, there's 22 teams worth more than Barcelona around the world. Liverpool's the fourth soccer team at number 29. Soccer is nowhere near as prevalent at the top of this list as I would have thought it was as a knee-jerk reaction if you had just asked me about this last week.
All right, well, then you said, you know, why or why not? We could talk about it. Let's talk about it. Why are the soccer teams not? And by the way, we know we've just had some pretty big teams sell. Man United, you know, Peace. You've had Chelsea in the not too distant past. So, I mean, we're seeing the numbers at what they're trading at. So this isn't sort of, we have some real world confirmation of what Kurt is reporting here, that, you know, they're not at 9, 8, 7 like the Cowboys, Warriors, Yankees.
Yeah, the main thing that jumps out to me, obviously, is the lack of cost control. In these leagues, right? That if you take a look at the
word
Cowboys,
you're looking for is salary cap.
Yeah, the Cowboys have a hard cap on what they are allowed to spend.
And Warriors have the yarmulke, soft cap.
The Cowboys have a hard cap. They get a check that's worth more than double the salary cap every year just from national revenue before they make a single dollar at home. And that is not just cost certainty, which helps its business, but also allows a lot of money to be turned into profit, right? The Cowboys are supremely profitable as an organization. If you look at these big European soccer teams like Man United, Real Madrid, and Barcelona, they essentially spend what they bring in. And it's $1 billion in and it's $1 billion out. It's
and they're also competing with entities, by the way, that are happy to spend whatever it takes to win.
Exactly. So you have teams that are owned by petrostates that have literally no financial limits. And you are constantly competing with them for talent. And unlike the NFL and unlike even baseball, which doesn't really have a cap but does have luxury tax controls and Americans,
some rev share,
think,
yeah.
You think of a baseball as really unfair when it comes to spending. European soccer is dramatically further than that. And another way to illustrate this point, Kurt, whenever he does these valuations, lists the revenue multiple that teams sell at. Right, the in the NBA at the top end, teams are selling for 11 times revenue. In the Premier League, valuation wise, teams are valued at four and a half times
much lower, much lower
revenue. Yeah. It's significantly lower. We haven't talked about relegation promotion. I think that at the top end here, not a huge factor. Like Manchester United and Real Madrid are not going to get relegated anytime soon. It certainly affects valuations at the lower end of those leagues.
I would have said Bear Stearns would still be around, Eben Novi Williams.
Maybe.
That's what I would have said.
I could be wrong. I think outside of like a Juventus-style massive scandal and financial fair play issue, I cannot see a world where these top teams get relegated. Ooh. But ooh. Yeah.
I can see that world. I can see.
So maybe there is, and it would be a good question for Kurt to see if promotion relegation is baked into the risk profile and his valuations of Manchester United or Barcelona or Real Madrid at all. Again, one of the things that I guess one of the few benefits of unlimited cost is that you are able, if you're spending at the top to virtually guarantee yourself that you're not going to finish in the bottom three of your league if you're in the European, if you're in the Premier League or if you're in La Liga as examples. But yeah again, the thing that jumps out to me when I look at the very cool color-coded list of the 100 most valuable teams is just how much soccer has fallen out of the top 20 relative to where it was just 5 years ago.
Now, we're not talking the marquee franchises that you just named, sort of those top six that have, you know, like the Super League wannabes. But I can tell you that proposed owners of middle-level clubs, when they were in negotiations or looking at some of these clubs, they were I would say counseled to include some sort of protection language, some relegation protection language. So obviously, you get sent down, your broadcast revenues are going to, you know, take a big hit. So, I mean, at least it figures in there. Now you wonder, like, yes, it is a possibility that a big league club, one of the marquee clubs, could get relegated. Could you imagine if, like, all of a sudden Manchester United is playing down in the second division or whatever?
Just what a catastrophe that would be financially for the club, in addition to the embarrassment for fans and players.
How many fans would show up? Yeah, how many fans are showing up? Just let's play some fun here. All those fans, like, they would be walking alone. I'll put it to you that way. Yeah. You know, when the players go on the field, they would be walking alone because I don't think too many would support him to come back up.
Juventus would be maybe the most the easiest way to test this, right? Because Juventus is essentially the Manchester United of Italy, and were sent down within the past decade because they finished in the bottom.
It's not poor punishment, right? They were docked a whole bunch of
points.
And
I don't know how much the fervency of fans and all that changed as they were working their way, and no surprise, they very quickly got their way back up to Serie A and are now back at in the top tier of Serie A. But yeah, it would be interesting to look at that. Another thing that jumps out to me, Scott, looking at, we talk a lot about how dominant the NFL is business-wise, valuation-wise. The least valuable NFL team is the Cincinnati Bengals. They are ranked 53rd on this list. So all 32 NFL teams in the top 53 of the most valuable sports teams in the world. A pretty amazing stat there.
Like you said, it's sort of you can't own an NFL team and lose money. Not right now. Not with the system in place right now.
Yeah.
It would be like, you would have to be the worst business person on the face of the earth to find a way to lose, like overpay some by tremendous amount on a lease or something like that. Because your biggest cost is your players, and it's a fixed amount. And we know how much more the national revenue alone covers those costs. And then we talk about tickets and T-shirts and suites and parking and all that other great stuff, the ancillary revenue from other parts of the business. Like, you just can't. Well, that's why they go for what they go. But winning and losing, not a big deal. People always wonder, if you win, is it worth more, whatever. Again, just number one, when's the last time the Cowboys won the Super Bowl? I don't have the year. Do you know?
It's been a while. 1996, been a while. Now, something like that.
All right, yeah. Like the Golden State Warriors, I would say their valuation has far less to do with this recent dominance of Steph Curry and the boys than Chase Center, downtown waterfront project. Remember years ago when we had Rick Welts, the former CEO of the team, on the program, he said, if I knew then what I know now, I just wouldn't have done it. Mm. Like what a really difficult project that was to get done. We've said it before on the program where the NBA union every year gets a chance to audit five teams at the end of the season. When that building came online, that was like numbers 1A, 1B, 1C. They were like, we want to see what the Chase Center is spitting off in terms of revenue. But Jets, number 10, right?
Yep.
$6 billion. Commanders, you know, we know that recent history. Josh Harris just bought for $6 billion. Funny, they're 605 there. They have a lot of teams that haven't won. Hey, Maple Leafs, even the top team in hockey, been a while since they won anything. Number 82. So you don't even have to really field a team that wins. Yankees? I know their business plan does somewhat rely on being competitive and being a winning team. That is what the brand stands for. And they suffer both in ratings, points, and attendance when they don't win. But they always have a high payroll, right? Are they going to shell out more this year? Everybody's asking. We're getting the pitchers and catchers. Are they going to go get Blake Snell? That would require some serious luxury tax implications. The Yankees of old, yes. The Yankees of now, maybe not, because we can still make some money. So winning and losing, not as big a part of where you will fall on this list.
Let's go back to the Golden State Warriors for a second, because you're right. If you look at the top 20, even more, it is very clear that recent success is not the biggest determining factor of how valuable your team is. The Warriors stand out alone to me, and we'll get to the Chase Center in a second. The Warriors have catastrophic. They have jumped up significantly in the past decade as they became one of, if not the most successful NBA teams of the past decade. I am very curious when the Steph Curry era ends, if this team ever suddenly has two or three years where they are not a good basketball team. In the same way that both the Lakers and the Knicks, the other two NBA teams in the top 10, have had those years in the past decade. I'm really curious to see how Kurt values the Warriors when this gravy train is over. And the obvious antidote to the argument that it might go down is what you said about the Chase Center. But so much of the Chase Center's success, at least long-term, in my opinion, is the kind of status symbol that the Warriors have in the Bay Area. And Steph is a big part of that. But his success is a big part of that.
It's a prime ticket and the suites and everything, yeah.
Yes, I do wonder if the team, because they were never anywhere close to this ranking or valuation before the team got Steph and became really good. It's the one team that jumps out to me on this list as, I wonder if there's 5 or 6 lean years in a row, what it does to their valuation. Because we know what that does to the Cowboys. It doesn't really affect it. We know what it does to the Knicks. It doesn't really affect it. All the teams that you mentioned are in here for other reasons. The Warriors are the only one that at the top here that jump out to me as at least a little bit of a question mark moving forward.
I wish I could remember the name. It would be an all-star move if I could remember the executive's name. But I don't. Shame on me. It's just been a long time. Let me ask you this, Nobi Williams. You probably don't know. So you could look at like Steph Curry going away. Fine. You had to prepare for the day when you were the Chicago Bulls. Like, what would business be like? Who's going to show up when you've got, remember there was, I believe the fun thing we said was there's showtime and slow time. Like, you had showtime and now you got slow time.
Yeah.
So you know what you had when you had Michael in the building. Okay. So let me ask you, do you know the dip that occurred when Jordan left Chicago? Do you know the dip that occurred?
I don't.
Do you want to take a guess?
I'd be very curious. So this is the dip in valuation?
I would say like attendance and all that, and suites and sponsorships, you know, the dip that occurred that would ultimately, of course, affect the valuation of the team.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going back by this. I'm only using my old brain here. I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
And I really wish I could remember the executive that was with the Bulls. I'm so annoyed that I can't remember his name. But just quick, you know, like 30,000-foot level, what do you think was the erosion or deterioration in the fan base?
I feel like you're setting me up to go way higher than the actual truth, but I'm going to say 25%.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I was setting you up. How about zero?
Yeah. How about that? I had a feeling that was coming.
I was trying to figure out a way I could maybe set a trap for you.
Yeah.
But, there was really no way. And I'm real. What was it? But they really built such a data-driven customer base of Bulls fans and who came, and they were able to tap the list, and they had a wait list and all that stuff. And there was no diminution. Virtually no diminution between showtime and slow time in Chicago.
That's great. And that's a model that I'm sure the Warriors are going to look at some point, right?
Yep.
When this run.
Oh, well, they're looking already. Yep. I mean, these are not young guys now at this point. You've got to be ready for when this thing is, you're not a championship team, already there, and when, you know, Steph is not there anymore.
Totally.
What was his name? Oh, it's bothering the heck out of me.
And then we stop recording, it's going to hit you.
No, I don't think it's going to – some things you get the recall and it comes back. Like, I know it, but, I mean, it is – there's the medulla in the back, and then there's the place where this is being stored, like behind that. Like, this is the back closet where there's so much stuff in front of it that it'll never make daylight. But anyway, I'll dig it out. I'll put it on.
So there are 10 leagues represented on the top 100 here, Scott. Not among those 10 leagues is Major League Soccer. The most valuable clubs in Major League Soccer over the $1 billion mark, 1.1, 1.2. The 100 list ends at 1.7. So at some point soon, I think you and I probably both agree that we'll probably have an MLS team on this list at some point in the next decade for sure. But season starts heading in today. today as we record on Wednesday, Inter Miami playing against Real Salt Lake. We teased a little bit of the kind of commercial breakdown of the Messi era, and then we got some news this week after we recorded. JP Morgan Chase, already, speaking of the Chase Center, already a big naming rights partner in U.S. sports, adding another venue, the temporary home of Inter Miami in Fort Lauderdale. What are you looking at heading into MLS season kickoff? No surprise, it's happening with Leo Messi on the field in some capacity on Wednesday night.
You're going to be mad at me.
Never.
No, you will. You know there are those times when I'm preoccupied and I don't hear what you said. We just had one of those times. I know it was Messi and MLS related, so I kind of know where you were going.
Yeah.
But I really, for a moment, I was like searching the depths of the brain, and the name came to me. Would you believe it? After I go on this big thing, how it's way in the back and it'll never come. And to be honest, I'm full. The name came in my brain, and then I was like, wait a minute, was that him? And then I Googled, and it is him. So I had the name. I just wanted to make sure. But it's Steve Shanwalt. So everybody, go look up Steve Shanwalt. And I'm looking up a Sam Smith article right here, June 22nd, 2015. Here's, let's see, quote from David Stern. Of course, it's not a program unless we bring up David. Steve was a trailblazer in every sense of the word in respect to marketing, game presentation, sponsor sales, and branding of the team. People could say and probably did that it's easy to fill up Chicago Stadium when Michael Jordan is in his prime. But because of Steve's ability to adapt to new ideas, new techniques and technology, after Michael retired and the Bulls weren't doing quite as well on the court, their attendance and revenue levels nevertheless remained at an extraordinarily high level, which was a tribute to Steve's expertise. Thank you very much.
Very Steve nice, Schoenwald. Scott. Huh? Very good on the memory and, and the stat.
Boom.
Very
boom. Impressed. I'm sorry. Now you were saying something about MLS.
Something about MLS. We maybe have this exact conversation in 2.5 years when Messi leaves, right? And then you have the exact same pressure on.
We'll see if I'll take the under on 2.5 years. How about that? How about that call right there? Taking the under
could very well be. But yeah, I mentioned as you were thinking about that and Googling it, Chase Center. The Chase Field, which is where the Diamondbacks play. We have another one, Chase Stadium now, where Inter Miami plays. A lot of commercial growth, not just for Inter Miami, but for MLS as a whole heading into the season. But curious, what's on your radar as the season kicks off, starting to think about from an MLS perspective?
I just want to know, is Jamie Dimon going to the game? Will he be there?
He has talked up Miami as a tech center, as another hub of economics in the U.S. a lot in the past, not quite to the degree of Ken Griffin, but not insignificant amount. It is notable to me for that reason, Scott, that this is JP Morgan Chase, because there are a number of financial services companies like Citadel and like JP Morgan that are clearly prioritizing Miami as it continues to grow as a hub for companies and people.
Yeah, remind everybody that Ken is in talks with, you know, to take a piece of the Dolphins. We should just
mention that. And he's building the most expensive home in the world in Miami.
Yeah. How about this on the sponsorship side? If Chase has the naming rights, how about this for value add? If I am a season ticket holder to that team where Chase has a great relationship, how about I get 2 points off my mortgage if I go with you? Like if interest rates are 8%, how about I'm an Inter Miami season ticket holder, I get 6%. What do you think?
I love that. Yeah.
Like, why not?
It seems a little dangerous, but like the mortgage rates are set for a reason. But I
understand. But they can, I mean, Chase is free to lend at any rate it wants.
That's true. Yeah.
So
that sounds like a good idea for season ticket holders and maybe not so good idea for JP Morgan Chase.
Well, we'll make it up on the back end. Somehow Leo has to show up and he does. If enough people sign up to have the Leo Chase branded credit card, then. You know, exclusive there only, where you get a whole bunch of discounts and things. I don't know. I'm just trying to think like Steve Shanwell. Yeah. Like, what could we do that would keep our levels high when Leo leaves? Like, well, you got to plan for that now. You can't, oh my God, he's leaving. What are we going to do? You got to start planning for the now. What am I looking at? How about the referees, though? I think this has been sort of not covered, a little undercovered.
Yep.
That apparently the MLS referees, just like players, just like anything involved in a labor dispute, and it always revolves around money. They want more money. Protesting, you know, they're out on the picket lines today in New York when the season starts. You certainly do not want to start a season where people are talking about anything other than the players and the expectation for the great play on the field.
Yeah, and we can think back to, and it was 2012, by the way, the NFL referee lockout, the replacement referees.
Should we do the call? Should we do the famous call? Was it a Seahawks game?
yeah, that in my mind, that was like 6 years ago, Scott. It was 12 years ago, apparently. But yeah, this is the kind of thing that the fans, I think, and probably other people around the league don't think about that much, right? There's collective bargaining with players, obviously, but there's also agreements with referees.
Sure.
And replacement referees, as the NFL saw back in 2012, can become a massive, massive storyline as your season progresses. So we're recording this on Wednesday. I believe there are some referees doing some picketing outside of league offices, just a short walk away from here on Wednesday. But this could last a long time. It could last before the end of the show, or before we publish this on Thursday.
How long this lasts? Are we talking about it after the game start? Did you see that horrendous missed call? Are the players complaining about their safety because these officials are not up to snuff? If that does not happen, the league has absolutely no reason to pay more money.
Yeah.
If it does happen, you watch how fast this is.
And again, for folks who don't remember the NFL, the joke that we just made, there was I believe it was a Monday night game. It might have been a Sunday night game. A very high leverage moment at the end of the game between the Seahawks and the Packers, when there was a catch in the end zone and one referee said it was complete and one referee said it was incomplete, and they're standing next to each other giving the contradicting signs. And then it became this huge thing, right? And it put a bow on top of exactly what you're talking about, which is the minute that a majority or a large contingent of fans or players suddenly feel like the product of the league has diminished because of the lack of the original or contracted referees. I agree. That's when suddenly the leverage swings a little bit.
Could solve this in three words? Three words. If this person says, "Get referees back," it's over.
Leo Messi.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Two words, yeah.
There you go. Refs back. Yeah. If Leo Messi at any point utters those words, this thing is done. Agreed. What do you need, guys?
Yep, agreed.
Yep. But yep. Anyway.
Speaking of Leo, did you see Apple?
I thought you were
going to
say speaking of Apple. Oh, yeah, there we go.
We're going. There we go. We're talking about two different things, I think, with a similar transition. Apple put out a playlist. Leo Messi's pregame playlist, which I think of as a good example of when you sign a broadcast deal with Apple, as MLS did, giving all of its international, local, and domestic rights over to Apple. A lot of things that Don Garber, the commissioner of MLS, and other MLS executives mentioned about that deal is we want Apple as a partner, not just for the streaming broadcast platform, but for everything else that Apple does, whether that's the Apple News aggregation, which is the way millions of Americans get a majority of their news, all the way through Apple Podcasts and Apple Music, as I'm saying, using Apple Music, the platform, as a way to promote Leo and Inter Miami and the season kicking off. We've seen it in Apple Maps. Scott, if you look at a number of MLS venues on Apple Maps, they clearly get a fun little priority integration in a way that not everybody else and certainly not all other stadiums get. There is a lot of different ways in which being part of the Apple ecosystem helps MLS. And we saw a new one on Wednesday. Apple announced it was unveiling its Score app, a dedicated app for similar to the ESPN app, that's the thing that most people use, but another app where people who want to keep tabs on scores across multiple leagues, see box scores, see stats, all that. There's odds integrations with DraftKings, all of that. Apple just launched that, and I'm sure MLS will get nice placement as part of that because of its 10-year deal with Apple.
All right, let's say you have to have that really quick MLS scores section. How high do you have to go for numbers? Do you need 6, 7, 8, 9, like for soccer? If you were going to be a betting man, you didn't want to be wrong. If you could get as close to possible, like the highest number you would need for the season, where are you placing that number?
5.
5? Oh, I think you need to go a little bit.
The way your
that.
Brain works.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm telling you. But again, hold on. We took the quote, right? Which this is the part I didn't really get. Hold on. I got to read this one. It's the Eddie Q quote. "You can obviously get scores in many places today, but I don't think anybody is focused and dedicated on the concept of live and making it simple, clean, fast like we've done," Apple SVP of Services Eddie Q said, blah, blah, blah. "We've spent an incredible amount of time engineering on this."
somewhere an engineer at ESPN is rolling his eyes or her eyes.
Yeah, right, I don't get it. I'm like, what? I really don't understand. Like, the UX of my score getting has never been a problem.
Yeah.
There are problems of UX for certain apps, but getting scores is just like, here's the score.
So
like,
I'm curious, Scott, if you were out and about, let's say you're watching Jackson play hockey and you're like, oh, I wonder who's winning the Islanders game tonight.
Yeah.
Are you Googling Islander score? Are you opening an app to do that? How are you getting
I go to ESPN.com. I go to NHL, hit scores, because then I get them all. So I'm never interested in just one.
So you do it in browser. You don't do it in an app.
No, I don't. No, I mean, if I may hit the ESPN app, that's fine. Yeah. But I'll go to ESPN. I'll hit NHL and hit scores. Just gets me everything.
Yeah.
Then I see what's coming on later in the night. I like to see when I get home. Is there a late night game? What network is it? Oh, good. I can watch that one. So something like that.
I'm the same way. I'm the ESPN app. Most people I know are the ESPN app. They've had a stranglehold on this thing for a while. I know that Google has work to try to get integrations into it. You can just Google a team and see the score immediately. And I know some people that do it that way also. It's been really hard for anybody, and Apple is in a good position to try to make a run at this. It's been very hard for anybody. Bleacher Report had its own thing. The Score, which was huge in Canada, but kind of really struggled to actually integrate into the US really well. And they tried the betting thing as well. No one's really been able to build a good app for scores to rival ESPN's. And we'll see if Apple can do that. The other thing I think is, and this is the dream I think for companies like DraftKings and FanDuel, but I think DraftKings and FanDuel would like to envision a future where if you want to see who's winning a game, you think, oh, I'll just go to the DraftKings app. I can see that just in the same way I can see it on ESPN. And that also means that, oh, if I see the score and then want to place a bet, I'm one click away as opposed to an app shift away. But there's probably, because of the sports betting apps, never been more competition on a lot of sports fans' phones for ways to get scores. And it will be very interesting to see Apple, obviously, because of the iPhone and because for a lot of other reasons, it is going to come out really well, I think, on this. But it will be interesting to see how much adoption this gets.
I have a great story. I know we're a little long, but folks, if you're on the treadmill and you're listening to the show, it's worth sticking around. And like, keep going, like lower it, whatever you need to do. Did I ever tell you the beeper story, like the score beeper story, Evan? I don't know if I ever told you this.
No, the ESPN.
I mean, you know most of my stories. Like, we're like a married couple now. Yeah, we're like a married couple where if I start it, you start rolling your eyes like, oh, do I got to do this again?
I think you'll like this one.
So, I mean, cutting edge technology back in the day, one of the companies sent us, it was a little beeper, right? And you could get sports scores on it. Like, that's how old I am. And it was like, it was the coolest. We used to fight in the department, like who got to bring it home on the weekends. It was like the coolest thing in the world. Like, there was no cell phone. There was no – just a beeper where you just got updating scores all the time. It was the coolest thing in the world. So one day, it was my weekend. I had it, and I'm looking at scores, and it happened to be the game where Reggie Miller, like, scored the quick three-pointers to beat the Knicks, yeah. Right? And I exclaimed, like – I was like, holy – you know what? Like, the Pacers beat the Knicks. Holy, whatever. And unfortunately, I did not, and my decorum was terrible because I did not take note of my surroundings in that I was in the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. It was a not a proud moment for me, you know. It's just not appropriate. Not good.
They're still talking about you in the staff.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy.
I mean, it's better than doo-doo-doo, here's your update. But I was like, I just exclaimed. I thought the Knicks were going to win. It was over, right? However many points it was. And then I was like, I saw the final score come by the beeper. Holy God.
It's also better than Justin Bieber's decorum at the Anne Frank Museum as well.
That's bad. So, that's bad as well. By the way, one more triangulation. Yeah. Who in the sports world, because we were talking about Apple, obviously, you know, the iPhone, one of the biggest successes out there. Who in the sports world was the main poo-pooer of the iPhone, saying it will never amount to, likely never amount to anything. It's a joke. It's such a huge price tag. This is crazy. We lead the market right now. We're fine with our phones. That thing's never going to work. Ha ha ha. What are they doing at Apple? Do you know who that was?
I love that. I mean, I'm thinking, was it Ballmer?
Steve Ballmer, yeah. go check out the clip of him panning the idea of the iPhone. Yeah, that's tough to be on film. That's a tough one to have on film. He did hedge with the tiniest of, we'll see. after saying that won't work, it's terrible. We sell all these phones and we're fine at Microsoft. We'll see, but we'll see.
Whoops.
And to bring this triangulation all the way full circle, the number one largest market cap company for U.S. stocks is Microsoft at just a shade under $3 trillion. So it worked out fine for Steve. Yeah,
It's okay for Steve, exactly, for
Microsoft as
well.
I'm not
sure I like bringing the triangle full circle, though. That's too
much. Too many shapes?
Yeah, too many shapes. Okay. We should have stuck with one.
You can't square that one. Okay.
Oh, boy. God almighty.
And with that, we end the show. He is Scott
Soshnick.
Soshnick. You can find me on Twitter at Novi _Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.